Backseat Producers, episode 161, Forbidden Planet. Hey, this is Tony.
Hey, this is Daryl.
And this is David.
We are the Backseat Producers.
And tonight's classic movie will be...
Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden Planet. And I believe this movie is older than all of us.
Yes.
Am I not put together. not put together.
And next week we're doing Lovely Bones.
Lovely Bones, yes.
Not like anybody listens to these in any sort of timely manner, so...
But, or in order.
Or in order. But for the people in the chat room, both of you, that's what we're doing next week.
Yes.
All right, Forbidden Planet. Let's fire this up.
What'd you think?
Leslie Nielsen. That guy had a hair color that wasn't white.
It's hard to believe, isn't it? Yeah, it's like I almost forget sometimes that Leslie Nielsen was a dramatic actor before he was a comedic actor.
Yeah, before he had a second.
Yeah, he's had a completely second career after becoming a comedic actor.
But the sad thing is, most people only remember him as from the Police Squad movies
and on. Yeah,
and on. Airplane. Nobody's going to remember that he was actually fairly serious actor and a very good one too.
Yeah, that was what blew me away. Like, what the hell, Leslie Nielsen? So I expected. It just to be funny, but it wasn't funny.
Well, no.
There were parts of it that were funny.
There were parts of it that were funny, but...
Like, the cook was funny.
Yeah.
But,
And he was only an afterthought.
I should be drinking bourbon.
Yeah,
in his honor.
Yeah. So, like, Leslie Nielsen blew me away. And the weird thing about this... Okay, so, like, the movie starts off, and they start doing their obviously 50s dialogue. Like, oh, the guys talk like this! And blah, 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 blah. So, they do that, and then I'm like... Which one of these guys is Leslie Nielsen? So then I'm like, man, that guy's ripped. That's Leslie Nielsen. Leslie Nielsen was ripped. What the hell? What is going on? Because he is obviously...
Completely
like,
changed your worldview.
Yeah, it did completely change my worldview. I'm like, I expect this to be Airplane. Like, Space Airplane. But it was not Space Airplane.
So was that disappointing for you or not?
It wasn't disappointing to me.
Okay.
Leslie Nielsen... Not as old as advertised. I don't know what to say. But he was awesome.
Yeah.
He was awesome. And the dude...
Walter Pigeon?
Walter Pigeon was awesome. Because he was creepy and
The guy on planet?
Yeah, the guy on planet.
Dr. Morpheus.
Morbius. He was awesome. And then the chick was worthless.
Well, she was there mostly for eye candy, so...
Yeah, that was weird. Okay, so that was...
And that one scene, that was like... Wow, how far are they going to take this?
Yeah, like where she's naked in the pool.
Yeah.
And she's walking around and she's like almost always naked. So I was reading some of the notes on this, and apparently this movie was one of the inspirations to Gene Roddenberry for Star Trek.
Yes.
Oh, I
you can
see
all the Star Trek elements
you can
all over
definitely
there.
See it.
Yeah. So, like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, God damn, that blonde chick looks like Yeoman Rand. And then I read that, and I'm like, booyah.
Yep.
Gene Roddenberry saw this short skirt, and he's like, Leslie Nielsen is going to tag the crap out of that chick. Leslie Nielsen is Captain Kirk.
Yep.
That's what I got. Dr. Morbius is... Damn it, I had something for this. It was going to be hilarious. Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch.
Oh, it'll come.
Ah! What'd you guys think of it? Ah, don't come to me.
This movie, you can watch it and watch it and watch it, and it still gets better and better and better with each watching. I mean, you keep looking back, hey, this is 1956.
Yeah.
And they pulled this together to make it a timeless classic. I mean, the special effects, a little hokey nowadays, but they hold up pretty well.
I mean, yeah, I mean, they were obviously hand animated, but they looked good. I mean, they didn't short shift you that. They did what they could.
Well, they worked the time, but then again, they to create the sense of scale on the machine, they did a great job of, you know, the false perspectives. The mats were all seamless. They're all well done. I mean, you actually feel like you're in something that's 20 miles high.
The outer space stuff looked like outer space. I mean, it didn't look like something was flying through on a string or any of that.
They put some effort into this movie to make it as believable and as entertaining for its time.
Yeah, and you know what? They took weird detail. Like, they made an effort to make some sort of scientific sense. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're going faster than light, they're going hyperspeed, which they're like, oh, well, they went faster than light, then they went faster than that. Blah!
Yeah.
Okay, so they're like, well, we need to decelerate. Everybody prepare for deceleration. It was like, that is a weird touch to add. For a movie that is, like, from the 50s, that is a weird thing to consider.
They did put a lot of thought into it. It really felt like reading good sci-fi from
the 50s,
yeah. Because I've read some 50s era sci-fi. Some of it was not very good.
Yeah, Indiana Jones and in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
It was 50s era sci-fi.
Yeah.
It was not good 50s era sci-fi, but it was 50s era sci-fi. Do we have a visitor?
Yeah, you do.
What do you need, bud?
I'm just coming down to get my jammies.
Go on through, undies boy.
God, you know what's killing me? What? I have something for Morbius. God!
You come.
God! Oh! I know, it was that good. I was sitting there, and I was thinking while I was watching this movie, I'm like, I've got something for Morbius, and it's going to be hilarious. And I'm going to call him that for the rest of the thing, and then oh, I got it. Booyah.
Well, we could bring it back.
Well, one thing to throw in here.
Hilarious.
Well, two of the things they threw in here that was kind of was unusual for its time. We introduced Robbie the Robot. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a robot. It's not a killing machine. It's not the monster.
Right.
It's actually the comic relief in most cases.
Yes.
They did weird things with the robot, too.
Yeah.
Like, the movie...
He had an attitude. He had a personality.
Well, he had a rather snooty butler.
Yeah.
And they consistently surprised me with this theme of going back to, like, clever...
Next week, can we do a podcast on Astro Boy?
No. You and I can.
I actually watched that and would talk about it. It doesn't fit in the schedule.
We'll set it up and you can come early and the three of us can talk about
it.
You're
works
welcome
for me.
To come out for that too.
That works for me. I enjoyed it.
All right.
I don't like the part where the kid dies.
No. Who does?
Come here. Who does?
Love you. Get to bed.
You know you're recording all this.
Yes, I know. Go to bed.
And you're on live.
It's almost 2.5 hours past your bedtime. Go to bed.
Okay.
Good night.
One of the things that they consistently surprised me with in this movie is going back and considering sci-fi, like, issues and then coming up with them. So they're like, hey, what's the deal with this robot? Oh, he synthesizes everything. Mm-hmm. He just makes it.
Yeah,
like
he just takes care of it for us.
Yeah, he just synthesizes it. And they're like, what? Yeah, he just puts the molecules together and makes it. What?
Nanotech 50 years ahead of its time.
Yeah, it's like, what?
Wow.
Yeah, that is an amazing forethought, like, from the 50s. And then even the best thing about it is the guys from Earth show up and they're like, we don't even have this technology on Earth yet.
Yeah.
It's like, that's awesome.
Yes, and Morbius said, oh, he's just a toy I put together. I just put him together.
She decides she needs a new outfit. And she's like, okay, I need new clothes.
Again?
Really? Again?
So he's like, all he does is make clothes. Will diamonds or emeralds do instead?
It takes me a week to synthesize that thing you want. Can we do something easier?
I've got this other stuff.
I got diamonds on hand. Isn't that enough? 50? It'll be 5, 10, and 20 carats.
Yeah. Like, make sure they're not small. 10 and 15 carats do.
So, I mean, that was clever. Anyway, Morbius is goddamn Dumbledore. There are points in there where he's talking, and he's got, like, the same face as the new guy who plays Dumbledore,
yep.
And every time he starts talking, I'm like, this is Dumbledore. Only Dumbledore would be banging. Not really, but...
Well, also in the movie, they also make fun of some of the sci-fi cliches, too. There's a point in there where Morbius says, I'm not the mad scientist and his lost daughter in the tapes.
Yeah.
He throws that out there.
Even though he's got the look of a mad scientist.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he totally has this crazy look going on, which is cool.
What's funny is, and you weren't here for that, but we did... Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah.
The videos for that, the guy they used for Dr. X looks exactly, it's just exactly like that guy.
Like Walter Pigeon?
Yes. Just like he looked in this movie, too, with the same facial hair and the same kind of wild eyes and crazy hair. Yeah.
So, one of my big complaints with this movie is, other than Leslie Nielsen, I had a very hard time distinguishing any of the crewmen from each other. Like, because they're all dressed exactly the same. They all look almost exactly the same.
Same height, same personality, yeah.
So
same
like,
look.
One dude is making out with the daughter chick, and then
Lieutenant Jerry.
Something happens, and then he goes away, and then later, there's a sea of other people, and I see Leslie Nielsen look angrily at one of them. I don't really remember why, and then he's pissed later when that guy dies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even know when he died, so... I think I thought he died the first time somebody was attacked, but it didn't actually happen until later.
He fought later. He got killed fighting the when we first see the energy id monster.
Yeah,
I'm not worrying about spoiling this movie since it's
54
years old.
54 years old. It's 54 safely years old continue. And considered a classic.
So we're kind of
so
in the clear.
I think we're in the spoiler clear area here. So if you don't want to be spoiled, just. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
Well, I want to throw another thing out, too, is even though, like you say, they all the crewmen look the same, it wouldn't be terribly unsurprising for such a small ship with a handpicked crew to kind of have similar
that
traits.
Was another thing they mentioned.
Well, they even mentioned it. He's like, yeah, I handpicked this crew of men whose average age is 23 years old who are the perfect specimens
and we've been
in the top of their field and...
Yeah, and we've all been trapped in a tin can for a year.
But basically, that whole speech is about these are a bunch of horny young guys.
Yeah,
and you've got a hot chick here, so
and you're the only woman on. Yeah, you're the only woman within 300 light years.
Lock your daughter away because somebody's going to bang her
because she's not wearing pants.
Yes,
that is true.
Someone's going to bang her, yes, and then like
Annie
he's
Francis,
like, you away. I'm going to bang this.
Annie Francis really does looks great in those miniskirts.
Yeah, she does, man.
And this, like, again, this is about 10 years before the miniskirt became popular.
Even for the '50s, like,
well, that's not even a mini; that's a midi, or excuse me, that's a micro mini.
Yeah. Oh, it was nice.
Honestly, it looked good.
Yeah. Then I looked her up on IMDb. A modern picture? No.
That was your mistake.
That was my mistake. That was
considering pretty much almost everyone who worked in this movie would be in their 70s,
yes.
If not 80s at this point.
Leslie Nielsen still looks great. Still looks like he's a proud 40-year-old man.
Leslie Nielsen's awesome.
Leslie Nielsen's timeless.
Maybe we should call him back for Forbidden Planet 2.
That would be awesome.
That would be kind of cool.
The Return of the Planet.
Well, supposedly there is a remake of Forbidden Planet in the works.
Yeah, 2013.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think it's been
Who's attached to it? Do they have anybody?
Yeah, there's who's the director of the two episodes back we were talking about? The guy from... not David Fincher. I'm trying to think. Oh, the same guy who directed The Fly. David Cronenberg.
Cronenberg?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He had that on his to-do list that's been...
Huh.
I don't know if it's
on
been...
his to-do list?
Yes.
I'm eating your children's candy.
That's fine. They don't need all that candy.
But they do.
That's why they can't go to sleep now.
It's a ridiculous amount of candy. This is a good neighborhood to trick or treat in.
Was it? Because there was nothing in our neighborhood.
Oh. We get crazy. Well, see, we are the closest neighborhood right off the highway.
Mm.
So we get a lot of people who come in from other areas. Mm. Especially towns to the west of here before you get to the river. Yeah, we get a lot of that traffic.
That doesn't surprise me that they're going away from East St. Louis.
Well, and it's a nice neighborhood. It's safe around here. It's, I mean,
yeah,
no traffic.
It's, and, well,
and the size of the houses are, these are family houses too.
Yeah.
So I mean, I bet most of the people in your block have.
It didn't used to be that way, but in the last year or so, we've got a lot of kids now in this neighborhood. Mm. Holden has a lot of friends within, you know, just up and down this block.
Yeah. Which is cool.
It is cool, because, like, there were three families that we all went together when he trick-or-treated, so that was kind of cool.
Wait, but, what Holden goes?
Heat Blast, one of the Ben 10 aliens.
I don't know what that is.
Ben 10's a cartoon where... Cartoon Network, this young boy has this thing on his wrist that he can change into different aliens.
Like a Pip-Boy?
I don't know what that is.
Fallout? A little wrist
okay.
computer?
Yeah, I haven't gotten that far in Fallout.
It's awesome.
It
should be on your list.
I don't own it. Stingray lent it to me. I just haven't had a chance to play it.
Stingray loves you.
He does. But Ben 10 can turn into these different aliens, and one of the aliens he can turn into is Heat Blast. It's basically like a Johnny Storm Human Torch kind of.
Wow.
So that's what he was, and Aaron, of course, was Cinderella.
Not to go on a tangent of a tangent, but Fallout 3 is great. Fallout New Vegas is better. Fallout 3 is very open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
Like, almost too open-ended. Fallout 3 has a compelling story from the beginning.
Cool.
I like the way they set it up. Like, you have to... You start, and you can see New Vegas, but you can't just go there. So you have to travel. Like, and then, like, the you follow the... You're trying to get to New Vegas, and you're following these people that forces you to go on a path, but doesn't feel like a path. It's good.
Yeah, I've got Fallout and... Dragon Age to play.
Dragon Age
Origins that you lent to Luke, who lent it to me.
Just have it. I don't want it. So much I hate it.
Anyway. Sorry. We've gone far enough afield.
Sorry.
Is there a Forbidden Planet game?
I wish. I play Leslie Nielsen every time. Also because I know
he
lives.
This would make a good RPG.
Mm. Ooh. It's kind of like a murder mystery.
Yeah. There's a nice mystery element to it.
It kind of felt like Menagerie, TOS Part 1 and 2.
Yep.
Obviously, you can see the influence from this movie on Star Trek.
Well, also, too, this is one of the first, I'll say, sci-fi movies that we never really see the monster.
Yeah.
We only see what he does and sort of... Sideways. The only time we ever see it full on is when it tries to break the
energy
barrier,
yeah.
And he gets caught up in it.
And it honestly, it is an excellent story.
The story's solid.
The story is solid.
Considering I mean, they borrowed it from a really good source.
What was the
Shakespeare? It's the Tempest.
Oh,
well, I mean, the sci-fi elements of it kind of changed the story, but
well, yeah,
like. Yeah, like, that was a good story.
You start with a very good raw material.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, to be fair, it was a little exposition-y up front.
But that
in
would
the
be
ship.
Typical
but
for...
But that's, yeah, I mean,
for
that,
the
50s, is,
that
is a
necessary.
Product... That was a product of people not having regular sci-fi that is considered mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Sci-fi is, I mean, Star really
Trek
is
the
only...
The sci-fi gateway... drug out there.
Yes.
If you're familiar with Star Trek, you understand.
Between Star Trek and then Star Wars,
yeah,
that really kind of broke the barrier. They're really not.
And each one of these had about a 10-year incubation period. 57, Star Trek was 65 on up, and then we had Star Wars in 76. So about 10 years apiece between them.
And then the next period, sci-fi, aliens.
Well, Terminator...
Well, Terminator 2 and Aliens were at the same time.
Right. But Terminator...
Not Alien. And
Terminator and Alien were... They broke some barriers.
They broke ground.
Horror.
They were horror. That's
the sci-fi
that's
wrapping.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, but again, and then Terminator 2 and Terminator 2 and Aliens were action movies with a sci-fi wrapping, so...
That's true. That is true.
But that's what we've come now to expect in terms of a sci-fi movie.
And there was some stupid argument on Twitter the other day about what is and isn't sci-fi.
I know. I told them they should all just jerk off into a cup because that's about the value of this discussion.
Battlestar Galactica is a character drama, not sci-fi. Shut up. Just shut up. That's stupid.
I hate that. I hate that what is and isn't sci-fi argument. But come on. Star Trek
it's almost as bad as the what is and isn't horror. What is and isn't a thriller. Yeah. Which we've had that argument here
There's
before.
There's been so much blending here lately. There is no demarcations anymore.
Right, if someone's going to wank about movies, it needs to be a movie review podcast. That's what people come here for.
We do have the right to wank about this. It's not Twitter is not the place. Our comment section. You can do it there. Appropriate. Have some activity in our comments section. That's what it's there for.
Yeah. Just tell us enough, dummy.
The sad thing is, after this movie came out, they're really... All the quality of them afterwards sort of like dissipated. I mean, you had the ones that came after this one. Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. Them.
Mosquito.
I mean, you always have the knockoffs that try to emulate and recreate what the first one had. Mm-hmm. You know, after Star Trek, there was a number of other space shows, like Space 1999 and different stuff like that that tried to...
Capture them, lightning in a bottle again.
And they couldn't. I mean, quite honestly, the impetus for making the original Battlestar Galactica series was they wanted something to compete with Star Wars. They wanted something to ride that
gravy train around. And the thing is, the studios at this time showed a tremendous lack of, I think, imagination, because they all were all giant monster movies. Now, granted, some of them were fairly decent, but you could see kind of where the mania was going in this between Forbidden Planet was being made. They were a more or less hopeful future of exploration, and then we turn around and, science is now completely evil, and we get giant mutated creatures that are devouring San Francisco.
Is a weird theme from the movie because the theme of one of the themes from the movie is not that. Mm-hmm. It's not that science is evil.
Right.
It's that
humanity. We are the instruments of our own destruction.
Yeah. It's like this darkness is in our subconscious and look, it's not just humanity. It's this kind of darkness is in every
living creature. Is in every advanced civilization. The Krell, had a million years of evolution, and they gave their subconscious minds the most powerful weapon in the universe and turned it loose.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know. I don't know how you get Mosquito out of that, but it's just going for the cheap thrill, which is disappointing because there was so much more there. Which is why I think the Star Trek was so successful. Because Star Trek has some great stories.
Well, Star Trek was also going for... I mean, they were going for the idea of a utopian future when we were in the midst of the Cold War.
Yeah. Right.
And that's... I mean, that was a... Gene Roddenberry touched on something that people...
wanted.
It touched on it in a way that people wanted, but wasn't fearful. Mm-hmm. It didn't play on people's fears. It played on people's hopes.
Yeah.
Which was really creative and something that was... Unusual
for that time.
It was unusual for mainstream sci-fi.
It's unusual in general.
Mm-hmm.
We do not accept media that plays on the hopes. I would rather have a dark show.
But we do. Historically, it has happened.
We don't accept is a weird way of saying it. It is, I more easily accept a dark, gritty show than one that is hopeful, because I don't want it to be a wank
fest. It's easier to sensationalize a dark, gritty show than it is to.
It's easier to relate to.
Plus, it's easier to make fun of a show that is hopeful and nice and good and wholesome and clean.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody makes fun of Seventh Heaven, but how freaking long has that show been on the air?
Is that still on the air?
I don't know if it still is.
No,
but it was
it
early,
ran a long time.
It was
time.
For 10 or 11 years, something ridiculous
that
that.
Terrible.
But that's just it. That's
but
what,
that show
it had an
that
audience.
Show touched people in a way that I will go. It was a hopeful show. It was about hopeful topics. It didn't play to sensationalize dark and gritty.
Mm-hmm.
Or how about Quantum Leap, where Sam every week ended up solving a rather naughty problem and left you with a fairly good feeling at the end of it.
Well, and I'm thinking of stuff like Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, God. That thing was nothing so saccharine.
It was, but it worked.
I know, but there was a huge audience that just loved that sort of stuff. And it was popular until Michael Landon died.
Yeah.
I don't watch any shows that are hopeful. None.
I don't think so.
Because I get really annoyed, like, at the end of the episode when everything is nice and neat and...
And this is why you should be watching Sons of Anarchy.
This is why I am watching Stargate Universe, though, huh? What did I tell you?
I'm 6 episodes in.
Did you watch Time yet?
Not yet. I haven't got that far.
Time is the best.
I started yesterday.
I'm just saying, Time is the best episode they've done.
I started yesterday. Let me get there.
I'll get you. Anyway, I recommend this movie.
It's solid.
And you know what? The movie continually surprised me. The opening with the space saucer, which was ridiculous.
I actually thought that was kind of cool. I loved that they played on a futuristic spaceship, and we are in it, and it's a saucer.
Yeah, it's a
flying saucer. I did like that. I thought that was clever.
That was funny.
They had a rather interesting way of opening. You had the ship flying into view, and you make the big tracking shot around, which for a model at that time, tracking a model like that from perspective to perspective was pretty innovative. I mean, we didn't see that again until we saw Star Wars.
What's up, Jimmy?
Right.
Yeah, you know what? That continually impressed by a few things. One, I expected this to be rife with 50s BS, and I was like, God, this is older than me. I hate it. But, like, from the moment they get out and start talking to each other, it wasn't 50s dialogue.
Right.
Like, 50s dialogue was pretty terrible. And they had that cadence.
It was, you know, I was a little annoyed with it when they were still on the ship. Because it was like, oh, this is just sci-fi talking, talking sci-fi. And it was like,
what if I reverse the polarity? And it's like, just stop using words you don't understand.
Right. You could tell that the people speaking the words weren't comfortable with them.
Yeah, but then as soon as they get off the ship, that stops.
And they start being people, and they stop being crewmen. Mm-hmm. Once they stopped being crewmen and started being people when they were on planet...
Then it was fine.
Completely different. It had a completely different feel. It was almost like that opening served to... We are in a sci-fi movie. You must accept that we are in space, so we're talking like morons.
Spacemen.
Yeah.
And then what?
And it annoyed me. And then they got on planet. It was like, whoa.
Then they stopped.
This is something just happened here, and I'm not sure what, but I kind of like it.
Yeah, yeah. Then they meet the robot, which is this is great. You're like, that's weird. We've never seen one of those before. Which you think is just the voice of the audience. And it's like, whoa, this is a new concept of a robot. And then they go to they meet Morbius, and Morbius is like, that's just the robot.
Yeah.
Don't pay any attention. It's not very special.
Perfect!
And then they ignore it for the rest of the movie. It's not a cheap trick that they have to keep playing on.
And I love how Robbie is just there to serve.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm here to serve. Period. That's my function, so that's what I'm going to do.
Yep.
I'm a prop.
Yeah, and Morbius even makes a point to say, he's like, that's a machine, it doesn't feel, don't worry about it. Done.
Yeah.
Done. And when he says that, he's right. That's actually true.
And they stuck with writing Robbie that way. They didn't give it...
Yeah.
I mean, with the exception...
They didn't try to anthropomorphize him too much.
With the exception of him being annoyed at her when she wanted to order more clothing.
And creeped out by the cook.
Yeah.
Will 60 gallons be enough? What?
Quiet, I'm analyzing. Burp.
Yeah.
Hmm. Cheap ethyl alcohol and fusel oil.
So, yeah, I was very pleased with his role in the movie.
And though the cook wasn't a great actor, I loved the character of the cook.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the most out of place crewman.
Get drunk.
He just wants to get drunk and
typical fanboy.
I need this for cooking purposes.
Yeah, he has the best line in the movie. You are the most understanding individual I've ever met.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy.
Yeah, I need this for cooking purposes.
At first, I didn't understand what he was talking about. Because, like, I realized the movie was from the 50s, but, like, he sneaks away and he's like, I want to know where I can get, you know, the good stuff. What does that mean? Are we talking about crystal meth or what?
Proposition 19.
Yeah, no kidding. So, I don't know. I was pretty generally pleased with the way that all worked out.
And the thing is, though, that guy was only put in at the last minute.
Yeah. Just for comic relief.
That was good. I dug it because it made the world seem a little more realistic. Well, to have somebody with motivations.
Yes.
Well, yeah. To have somebody with motivations that had nothing to do with the grander scheme. I'm just the cook.
Allegedly.
And I want to get drunk.
Allegedly.
And chase women. Because the first thing is another planet with no women, no pool halls, and no booze. Like, I've been out here too damn long.
Allegedly. I've read this in the IMDb show notes. There was a scene with the cook and the robot. Where the cook is like, man, I wish there were women on this planet. And so,
oh, female companionship.
Yeah, female companionship. And so the robot synthesizes like a female chimp or something. He brings it to him. That would have been classy.
That would have been hilarious.
Not what he's expecting.
No, but, I mean, I'll be honest. I wasn't sure what to expect because I've never seen it. I just haven't gotten around to it. But I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Daryl, for bringing it up.
This movie surprised me with how much I liked it. After it was over, I was like, God damn, that was a good movie.
And the thing is, you can watch it again and just in freeze frame and look around and notice all the features that you missed the first time around.
The visuals were not bad. Like when they're walking through the Krell Science Lab. Aside from the part where they're actually in the lab, when they're like kind of walking around on a little causeway and things are moving around and like you're not on a power plant, looked nice. Like it wasn't Phantom Menace.
Great set design. I mean, it really was great set design.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't Phantom Menace like that kind of hall with the like the bottomless pit,
crazy out stuff happening outside.
But it looked similar,
right?
And it didn't look bad.
Yeah, it looked realistic. I mean. And that's the best compliment I can give. It looked like they were really walking where they proposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few goofs and technical issues, but...
Yep.
But they mostly got it right. Well, also, the soundtrack. This was kind of an unusual feature in this movie, that it had a completely electronic music soundtrack. And if you look in the show notes there, they said the director of the film... happened to go to a nightclub in New York where he's listening to the two guys who were making this electronic music and hired him on the spot.
Nice.
And they composed this whole sequence over a 1 month period. Unfortunately, they got in kind of Dutch with the musicians union because they did not consider this music. So if you look in the credits, it says tonalities by.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's what we refer to. This is a tonality. Or tonals. Yes, and Disney animators had a big hand in doing a lot of most of the special effects work.
Yeah. Chibi's in the chat room. He's our animation expert, our go-to guy for animation. He said that all the rotoscoping was done by Disney animators because at the time, Disney animation was the finest special effects available.
Well, they had
and
only.
That makes sense.
They were the only people who were doing rotoscoping animation on a regular basis.
Right.
So MGM was pretty wise to tap into that expertise.
And it didn't look bad.
No. No, it looked really good.
Yeah, like that whole scene where the id monster is like kind of going through that electronic fence.
That one, and Chibi mentions it too, when he shoots the tiger. As it's jumping at him, mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool too because it looked like a natural motion of as it dissolved coming at him.
Yeah, I mean that was a cool scene. And it didn't go in the direction I thought it would go. I thought like she'd get really pissed and she's like,
yeah.
"Hey, why'd that thing attack me?"
Right.
Like you had to kill it, but why did it attack me?
Right.
Like.
Yeah, because I thought for sure she was going to, like, start weeping, you know, you killed my
she was
going to
get pissed. All emo out, on him, yeah.
She was going to get pissed, and turns out she's the monster or something like that. She's not really real, but she's been killing people. It's something weird like that. But that didn't happen.
No, it was... it was clever. It did things that I would have expected out of movies that came after it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That is the best way to say that.
I mean, because for as much as this created tropes of things that have come after it, it didn't stand up to most of the tropes that people have tried to do after it.
Yeah.
Like it did things that were much more thought out, mature, that its predecessor, or its...
Ancestors.
No, that's the same thing.
Predecessors.
No, shows right. That have come after. Descendants.
There we go.
As its descendants. Wow. Words not happy with me tonight.
Tired! I know.
Successors.
There it is.
Better word.
Yeah.
Thank you, chat room. Yeah, I mean, there have been movies that have used this as inspiration, and they did cheaper things with the story that actually lessened the impact of their stories, when if they would have kind of full-on went from the source material and the clever, mature story that the way that they handled it, they would have had a better movie for it.
Mm. Well, I think one thing that helped to probably make this movie as good as it did is it had MGM's name on it, and they were not cheap bastards. They spent 2 years in the production of this movie, so they put some of their best people on it.
I would believe 2 years. I mean, and that's... And at the time, 2 years for a movie is
a ridiculously long time. Well, at that time, when the typical studio film was only shot in 30 days and usually up on the screen a month later, this took a phenomenal amount of effort to do. And plus, they had to create all the special effects.
I'm sure quite
to boot.
A monetary investment, too.
Once again, Chibi says everything I want to say about her. It out Star Trek, Star Trek.
That's true. And, you know, one of my big complaints about Star Trek is always the interpersonal relationships. There was conflict amongst the crew. And there really was. There was jealousy. There was infighting.
There was drunkenness.
And I appreciated every bit of that. And it made for better characters.
It was cock blocking. That was my favorite. Yes. Hey, the captain's kind of got a reputation.
What are you doing? Jesus, right out of the gate.
Guess I'm strange.
Well, like Chibi said earlier, he's more Mal than Kirk.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kirk, that tiger would have lunged at him, he would have wrestled it.
He would have punched it in the face. He would have punched it in the face, and then he would have just done that chick right there.
Yeah.
There would have been no debate.
He would have used the tiger as a
metaphor.
And lost his shirt.
He would have used it as a metaphor.
Oh, man.
Wow.
God damn, this movie was good. I don't think I ever.
I put guards up to keep you away, and then I'll put more guards on the guards.
That's a good assessment, Chibi. I like that. More Kirk than Mal, or more Mal than Kirk. I watched Star Trek the other day, well, TNG, right before Stargate Universe came on.
Mm.
It's good.
So, anything else to say? Any other trivia that you picked up when looking at IMDb?
No.
I'm surprised with this movie, as long as it's been out and as well as known, it's never really had a more or less making of book ever written about it. Because it seems like so much ground was broken in this film that no one is a cast or crew or whatever has made it a making of. Now, in the DVD, if you get the 50th anniversary edition, they do have a short vignette by Walter Pidgeon, who kind of introduces the movie, was apparently a part of a long introductory trailer that was supposed to have been run during the time of the movie. But they also have deleted scenes, and they also have the alternate scenes.
I watched the deleted scenes. It's not really deleted scenes.
Well, yeah, they're left. It's
footage from the vault, and it was basically some of the test shots. It was the test shots of powering up the reactor, and they're like, yeah, this has long been considered a predecessor of Star Trek, watch this scene and you'll see why. Oh, and basically, like you see those things and it was like, holy crap, this looks just like the transporter bay. I mean, it looked exactly like the transporter bay.
That's cool.
Well, the other thing is not so much deleted scenes, but alternate scenes, but how they were, you kind of get an idea of how the process was going along. Yeah. And one of the little notes in there was that there was some suspicion that for some of this that they didn't finish editing the movie all the way through. But when it comes back and says the reason why it comes out the way it is was because in test screenings the audience reaction was so positive they decided to just stop editing and just go right straight to release.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks, but that was just cool.
So the audiences of the who were watching it in the test viewings apparently responded pretty positively.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that I could have seen done any better with that was some of that stuff in that opening sequence, if that was edited just a little tighter. Some of the dialogue just seemed really... It's like somebody would say a line, and then there would be a few seconds.
A delay, yeah.
And then there would be another line.
Well, yeah, there's no... There's
just a little bit of tightening up, but I mean, that's such a minor quibble. That,
well, again, it could have been just the when they were at the time they were shooting it. These could have been the first few... principal photography, where the cast wasn't really comfortable with what their lines were,
or that's the direction just, or was that's just the very... pace that they were going for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because like I said, when this was going on, this felt very 50s sci-fi-ish, you know? This is probably just the trope that they played into, let people think they're in one kind of sci-fi movie, and then... Because once they get on planet, things change considerably.
I'll tell you what, go watch some of the World War II submarine flicks. Because this is kind of the same type of dialogue. And you'll notice their dialogue tends to be a little snappier. It's true. But it's because they were probably, at the time that these movies were done, there were still some people who were coming back from the service who still
understood the dialogue.
Well, they understood the interaction between the captain and the crew and how it would work. Granted, this is a little, it goes a little stilted at the beginning. But, yeah, their dialogue improves, or their rapport improves, throughout the movie.
Report.
Excuse me.
I think that you keep saying, like, maybe they were just trying to trick them into thinking it was one kind of sci-fi movie. I didn't think there was a big pool of sci-fi movies.
No.
This was
groundbreaking for its time.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression that I got, too. So it's not like they were...
Or maybe they were just doing it for the benefit of the audience, to let the audience kind of digest what was going on.
I don't know. It's a weird choice. It was the worst part of the movie. When they started with that, I was like, I'm out for this shit. But then it went away, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe they did it as a contrast. Like, they put the really boring stuff up front, and then it only escalated from there, which is the type of story I prefer.
Well, I'm going to go with the fact is that the crew, the cast, just wasn't comfortable with their lines.
And
they have not been able to dial in their performance just yet. And the later ones
that they did make a lot more sense.
The director took a stronger hand, or they got more comfortable with their dialogue.
I can buy that. I would be fine with that. Man, that short skirt hadn't shown up yet.
Yeah.
There's something about a chick in a short skirt.
Dialogue gets snappier.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of things get snappier.
Some things come to attention really quick. Yes,
I thought the Oscar statuette was modeled after my erect penis. I didn't think there was much. I didn't think there was much debate on that.
Oh, that's one of the things they did mention in some of the trivia, that the scenes where Morbius's backyard and grounds, that was a recycled Munchkin set from The Wizard of Oz.
Nice.
Yeah, MGM doesn't throw anything away. They just constantly
Of those studios don't.
Yes, the sets that were used for one movie were often recycled many, many, many times.
Stingray.
You haven't seen this movie.
You should, though. It's good.
Your geek card has been revoked.
I wouldn't go quite that far. But
considering up until a couple of days ago, two of the three people sitting at this table hadn't seen that movie.
Way to Adam Sting. That's awesome. Oh man, Chibi. Alright, I think I'm done here.
Okay, I think we beat this one to death.
Well, I don't, because I think the resolution, the ultimate resolution of the movie, we've kind of glossed over. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
It was good. It was really good.
I mean, we talked about it a little bit at the beginning that, you know, they make this huge play about how the Krell are. They almost made it seem like the Krell had some design, mm-hmm. and that they were hiding something, and that this monster is some artifact of yeah. the Krell.
Yeah.
But it turns out the whole time it wasn't. It was all coming from him.
Yeah, that was good.
And I dug that. I thought that was really clever.
Jimmy, the answer to that question is that we agreed it was sci-fi. It was 50s sci-fi, so it wasn't great. Like, the science-y part. But the science-y parts of it were oddly considerate.
You know what? I wouldn't call this fantasy.
No. I wouldn't. I'd call it sci-fi.
No. I would call it sci-fi. I mean, especially considering what they knew at the time and their advancement of the knowledge of what they knew of science at the time. And
even now.
For the most part, now, too. About the only thing was is the hyperspace thing is still one questionable thing that people still debate.
Argue about, but I mean, like, the rest of the stuff, take out hyperspace, because...
That was...
That's... hyperspace, okay, for the people who think that hyperspace is bad sci-fi, okay, yeah. It's just a placeholder for whatever traveling quickly through space is going to be called. Yeah, we don't know. If we knew what it was, we'd be doing it. So, get over the hyperspace thing.
Yeah, about the only way you can get around that is either to do generation ships or hibernation.
And even then, it still took them a year to get there.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, they didn't just go.
Yeah, they didn't just show up. So I'm going to call this sci-fi.
Yeah.
In my professional opinion. And I do have a doctorate in filmology, so...
I gave it to you.
That's fine. Accredited.
Accredited. Pimp accredited.
Pimp accredited. We actually had a long, lengthy fantasy sci-fi discussion earlier in the episode when you hadn't shown up yet, Jimmy.
Ooh.
All right. That's all.
That's all I get to.
All right. Next week, the lovely bones.